and that sort of thing. It became more extreme, didn't it? Did you disagree with that, or did you support burning houses, burning letters, and that sort of thing?
No, I didn't like it. But I didn't actively support it.
So you kept in the background, rather?
Kept in the background, yes.
Yes.
I didn't mind doing things where it involved myself. I never have. For instance, during the war, I used to go on duty every night on the cliffs at Tynemouth. And I used to get quite a fair amount of flak from the anti-aircraft people.
Did you?
Because I was just in their line of fire. But I didn't mind if it was just myself. Then I was bombed out, you see. They dropped a bomb.
Did they?
In the garden.
Goodness, I see.
Actually, to the mine. My garden was full of rubbish for a long time. And that was what, one of the things which sent me up here. Because my house wasn't very livable after that.
Mm.
It was an oldish house, a couple of hundred years old. And they were very horrified when I left. The war was over, you see, and I didn't feel there was any more work for me to do.
What about your, when you went on that deputation that you mentioned, and you said you were arrested, can you describe that in a bit more detail, what happened exactly? You went down to London, I suppose, what, by train, did you?
Yes.
What happened then? Can you remember? It's a long time ago, isn't it?
I think there were about 10 of us from the Newcastle branch. And at a certain time, you see, we met, I think it would have been Clements Inn, and were marshalled and made our way to the Houses of Parliament, where we were stopped by posse of police, and we declined to be stopped. And because we stood firm, and refused to be turned back, that was when we were arrested. And then we were, I forget which police station we were taken to, but I remember we had to, I lay on the floor, it was night, with my head in one of those old-fashioned buckets, like a fireman's helmet, you know. For hours and hours until someone came to bail me out. And it was Mr. Pethick Lawrence. And Mr. Pethick Lawrence bailed us out. I did keep my bail sheet, but my house was so spoiled
when the mine
bomb fell,
yeah.
That my papers weren't possible to see, covered with soot and stuff. And then the next day, it was Mr. Lurvey who bailed us out. twice Mr. Pythagoras and once Mr. Lowy. I forget who. He was a solicitor, a Jew, and a very, very keen suffrage supporter, and was always very kind and very generous.
How do you spell Lervy? L-E-V-Y?
Now, how was it? So far as I remember, L-O-U-W-E, I think.
Oh, Lovey, yes, yes, yes. That was Ruth Galank's family, wasn't it?
Yes.
Ruth Lovey married Victor Galank, didn't
yes.
he?
Yes.
Yes, yes, yes. Did the police treat you badly while you were being on these deputations?
No.
Or was there a sort of joking relationship between you and the police?
Just. You see, when you were just a bit of arm pushing and so on, I made no complaints. I found the police were always very nice to me.
I suppose you were involved with Emily Davison's funeral, were you? Did you get involved in organising that? And Emily Davison, you know, the one who threw herself in front of the King's Horse.
I knew Emily Davison very slightly. I knew her mother much better.
Did you?
Her mother lived in a little cottage in Long Framlington, or Long, and she used to give teas. And it was the mecca for the young people like my brother and myself to bicycle out and have tea with Mrs. Davison. She used to give us very good teas. Well, a daughter, you see, was a very clever girl, and she didn't stay in Morpeth district. It was why we didn't see her. She used to come up, of course, and see her mother occasionally. But I only knew her really well through her mother, whom I knew quite well.
What sort of person was her mother? Well, she was a feminist as well, was she, her mother?
I think she felt that her daughter was rather too much for her. She was a typical country woman. A very fine woman. Worked hard, kept herself. You know, there were a lot of these women in those days which I'm afraid you don't see very well. Fiercely independent. They weren't grants for this and grants for the other. Not even, I think, the old age pension in those days. And Mrs. Davidson fought fiercely to keep herself going with these teas. And quite a lot of young people used to go, especially on Sunday afternoons. Because all this, you see, is what?
50 years ago? No, 70 years ago.
60?
70 years ago,
yes.
But she ran a tea room, so did
life
she?
Life was quite on a different basis in those days.
She ran a tea room then, did she?
Yes.
I see.
Well, a little room in her own cottage, yes.
What happened to Mr. Davison then? Where was he? Why did she have to support herself?
I don't know where Mr. I never saw Mr. Davison. I think he must have died.
Mm.
Because I think she was a widow.
I see. I see. So So what did you meet Emily at all? Was she do you remember anything about Emily?
I didn't remember Emily because she didn't work with us.
No, I see.
She was a higher grade in a way because she was more militant.
Yes. But you went to her funeral, I suppose, did you? Did you go to her funeral? She was buried up here in Morpeth, wasn't she?
Yes.
Did you go to the funeral there?
Hmm?
Did you go to the funeral when she was buried?
No.
I see.
I had a person from Carlisle last year who wanted very much to start a fund to put up a monument for her in the churchyard. But it fell through, I think, because she wasn't very well. And of course, not an easy time.
No.
Because there's nobody really that knew Emily that I know of. Knew her well. I might have seen her a few times, you know, but never really knew her. But of course, I knew her mother.
But if you look back over your life, Miss Balls, over the whole of your life, what do you think the suffragette movement did for you personally? I mean, what do you owe to it personally?
Well, it taught me quite a lot, and I made friends. It changed my life in many ways, you see. For instance, getting to know the parson so well, and I worked quite a lot with Thady Parsons, and I got to know so many interesting people. Oh yes, made my life quite different.
Broadened out your experience, really, did it?
Yes. And it was through Lady Parsons that I got interested in the youth, the Girl Guides. I worked with them for 20 years, and I thought it was time someone younger took it on. And I still have guide friends, you know. A wonderful, wonderful movement.
Mm. Were there a lot of suffragettes and suffragists in the guides, Girl Guides, do you think? Did you meet many people there who were in the women's movement?
No, I don't think I did. You see, they were mostly quite young. First camp I ever took was some of the girls from here. One was Sir John Craster's sister, and the other was Earl Grey's daughters, two of them. And a tremendous wide area of people. But they've practically all gone now. Yes, when you get to 90, you know, and not many of your contemporaries left.
But as it got you speaking as well, didn't it, the WSPU work? Mm? It started you off in public speaking as well, didn't it?
Oh, yes.
That was another thing it did for you, really.
Yes, and I could have gone on permanently to the... I used to run the children's hour for the BBC. I was Auntie Nora.
Were you really?
And I was on the first play that was ever broadcast. I was an old woman, I remember. And I used to do a Saturday talk, usually a nature talk. They would say do a series of Saturdays, you see, and Saturdays on one series I remember was on foreign capitals. I think not like that, and lots and lots of plays I was on. I was a witch in Macbeth of them. Oh, it was great fun. But I didn't want to be tied down.
Because you had your parents, you mean, to look after?
Because I felt my parents were my first duty. It's a very old-fashioned idea, isn't it?
Well, there was nobody else to look after them, I suppose, if your brother was married and committed.
Mm-hmm. But now, of course, parents are just pushed into nursing homes, aren't they?
Yes. But can you tell me a little more about the Newcastle branch, the WSPU branch? What did you do there? You had a shop, did you? A suffrage shop of some sort?
There was a little office. I can't remember what the office was. And there was an organiser. And she would address masses and masses of drawing room meetings. They were a great thing, you know.
What was a drawing room meeting exactly, Miss Balzac?
Well, you would induce someone to invite their friends. Now it's coffee mornings, you know, but it was the same type. And when they'd heard what they were invited to hear, they were invited to join. And of course, even if you weren't militant, you could always help by raising money. You have to have money to carry on. Or giving another drawing room meeting. That was a great thing.
So drawing room meetings were quite important, were they, in getting the movement launched?
Oh, very important, yes. And then, if you were young and active, you could go and chalk the pavements to say there'd be a meeting at a certain time. Chalking pavements was a great occupation. Meet here at such and such a time. And places like the market in Newcastle and so on. And selling the paper.
Did you sell the paper yourself sometimes?
I've never sold the paper. That was a rather further down the scale, you know. If you couldn't do other things, you sold the paper. And you chalked. But if you were a little more active and a little more eloquent. You see, you were promoted to standing on the lorry and doing the haranguing. I was lucky in those days. I had a very strong voice. And I could always make a carry. Partly because I had natural strong voice, and partly because it had been trained.
How had it been trained? You mean for singing?
No, by drama.
Oh, I see, yes. Yes.
And I remember I think it was after we got the vote, going to a summer school in Stratford-on-Avon, part of which was run by a woman called Elsie Fogarty. Have you ever come across her?
I think I have, yes. I know the name anyway, yes.
She was a very famous voice producer. Even all sorts of people went to her. And I remember her saying to me, and I very much annoyed was, "You know, you're very lazy. You've wonderful gifts, but you're lazy." And that was because I wouldn't take a full-time job.
Well, you had your mother to look after, your
parents. I had my mother. Mm. I don't really think there's anything else I can tell you, you
know. That's marvellous. Did you see Christabel Pankhurst at all? Did you see anything of her?
Oh, yes, quite a lot.
You said she was a bit different from her mother. She was younger, of course.
She was very bonny and a very good speaker, very witty. And you know, oddly, when we got the vote, she went to America. She founded a new religion.
Yes, yes. She became a sort of evangelist, didn't she? A sort of travelling evangelist.
Yes.
I forgot to ask you, were you a Church of England?
Yes, we were always COV.
Mm. Because my feeling is that quite a lot of people divert into the women's movement a lot of the energy that earlier generations had put into religious activity. Did you feel that? I mean, I think it's almost like a religious movement, isn't it, in a way? Like a crusade, in a way.
Yes, I think they did feel it was a crusade.
Well, that's very interesting. You met a lot of friends in the movement, really, didn't you? A lot of people who were useful later on, really.
Yes. And then it took me into the guide movement, which I was very devoted to. I was commissioner for Newcastle.
Were you?
And the Council of Social Service.
It must have been great fun in the suffragette movement as well at some times, wasn't it? And you must have had a lot of laughs
and
good fun.
Yes, of course. If you saw the funny side.
Yes, there was a sad side to it as well, of course.
Yes.
Did you find that the villages were more backward than the town, Newcastle town, really? Did you have to go out to the villages on your bicycles to spread the gospel, so to speak?
Well, very difficult to get hold of a meeting in a village. It had to be a large village. Now, you see, one of those postcards. It's a meeting at Hoi Bowers. Well, there, it was Puller's Dye Works. Wherever there were works, you knew you would get a gathering without difficulty. If you had to hand pick them, it was much more difficult. So really, it was either a meeting in a house, a drawing room meeting, or else it was a place where there was a nucleus of workers. Otherwise, you simply had to stand up on the lorry and talk and talk and talk to absolutely thin air until you got hold.
So on the whole, it was a town-based movement.
On the whole, you liked to know that you would get a nucleus to start with, and then you would get the hangers-on.
But you went out on bicycles, did you, from Newcastle and Tynemouth to the villages, the bigger villages, did you, to try and get them
started?
Yes. Because a bicycle was a very important help to women's emancipation, wasn't it?
Of course it was, yes. Because cars were very much more rare in those days. It wasn't taken for granted that everybody would have a car.
No, absolutely.
Or at any rate, be able to hire one. We were lucky if we could hire a lorry.
What was the you went all round the north, didn't you, organising for the WSPU. Was it a good area to organise for? It's a difficult area in some ways, isn't it? It's very mountainous or hilly. Area.
Yes, well, of course, we went right down into Yorkshire.
What about the people? I mean, were the people friendly on the whole in this area? Was it a good area from that point of view, do you think?
I think it was quite a good area in and around Newcastle. But of course, soon you got out of it. I remember my mother, who rather unwillingly was going round when I was standing for town councillor, talking to an old fisherman at colour codes, gazing out to sea. And she used to begin, I don't know whether you approve of women being on town councils. He looked at her. You know, aye, maybe so do. But mind, you're far over young. What do you say to that? Of course, some of the suffragettes were very young. If they had their hair was hanging down, and that was extraordinary in those days. It wasn't usual as it is now. They used to put it up when they went to meetings. There would be two speakers, someone who introduced, and the speaker, and usually other two, one selling papers and the other perhaps going around just chatting with people. You needed three to have a satisfactory meeting. Oh, we got very professional and proficient.
You got a routine established, really, did you? Yes. For getting a meeting Lords.
Well, you never came up as far as Bamborough, for instance.
It was too remote, you mean?
Hmm?
Bamborough was too remote.
Yes.
Yeah.
Too difficult.
Yes. 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 I suppose in a way it was a young people's movement, wasn't it? I mean, it was an opportunity for young people to enjoy themselves and do something useful.
Yes. There were lots of 17 and 18 year olds. And if they used to go out to meetings, they would put their hair up to look a little older and more dependable and responsible.
And one person you may have met, who I've met, is Helen Fraser. Do you remember Helen Fraser at all?
No, I don't.
Because she was active in the Hexham by-election in 1907. Perhaps that was before your time, I don't know. But I've met her. She's... you said you've been to Addis Ababa. What took you to Addis Ababa, actually? Were you just... a tourist, or
just as a tourist.
Yes, yes, and that's what took you on safari to Uganda as well, just as a tourist again.
Yes, I really went to the animals on safari, and I liked the people in Addis Ababa. I remember an American airman saying to me, you know, I think it was before Churchill died, that Haile Selassie is the greatest man in the world, the exception of Churchill. And I thought he was very interested in his people.
Yes, I think he was very, very...